back. WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively taking the show back out on the road. My back's feeling a little bit better. A couple weeks out, we're doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery. Let yourself play. By the way, we had John Martin on this week talking about when we're getting these casinos open and sports gambling. I keep telling my wife it's going to be just like Vegas, except the tier. You're going to be able to go in, sit down, gamble on games, watch games, and that's the way this is going to be. Before then, though, we're going to be having crab cakes. I haven't had a crab cake in a month. Doing Silver Spring Mining Company in the Chop Tank this week, next week, Wednesday, with Don Moeller at Fadley's and great guests. Friday, we're going to be at Nick's Grandstand Grill later in the afternoon. And then on the 17th, we are with our mayor, Brandon Scott. Don Moeller joins us now. This is the segment we call The Recon. It usually gives me a chance to talk about all sorts of things. Don, I've talked so much NFL this week, don't want to do it. I've talked Ravens, Minnesota, don't want to do it. But I tell you one thing that happened here this week, and this is where I'm going to bring you in, and this is where you're going to tell the story about losing your dog, and that's okay, because the old cold stories at Friendship Airport, although Maddie wasn't on those teams. But losing Tom Maddie this week, I don't know, man. You've really had a rough year, and I, you know, on a personal level, off the field for you, losing friends. We lost Ted. You can't stop talking about losing Ted, and we've been doing segments about that, and Nancy Pelosi coming in and all that. You've lost a lot of friends. You're getting older. I'm getting older. I'm 53 right now. I don't know that I'm ever, like, prepared for that. You know, when Tom Maddie died on, I guess it was Tuesday night into Wednesday. And how it happens now, it used to be a WNST text, or it'd be on the news, or you hear it on the radio or whatever. Now it, like, was legitimate friends of Tom Maddie's that I saw it on my Facebook page in the morning, that it didn't come from the Sun. It didn't come. It just sort of came from a couple of friends that said Tom Maddie died. And I'm like, I'm not ready for that. I mean, I see Tom a lot. I mean, right. You know what I mean? Like, and I wasn't super close to Tom at all, except I'm in the kitchen crying and my wife needs to give me a hug, because it just really, it kind of hit me in a different kind of way than I even thought it would, because you don't think of it like that. And we start to lose these cult legends. You think about your mom, my dad, and it screws with you. You know, it really does.
Well, Nestor, it does. And you're right. As we get older, and I'm, you know, older than you are, but I'm at that point now where I'm losing cousins, and you know, we're coming up on Thanksgiving, and I always think one of the cousins I was very close to was a major in the state police department. He and I grew up together. We were like brothers. He was like another brother to me. We would actually talk, which is unusual for cousins. I don't want to exaggerate it, but certainly twice a week, you know, he would call me on his way home from work from the state police, or I'd call him on my way home from work from Greenwood out in Baltimore County or out in county government. And, you know, we spend every Thanksgiving together since we were little children. So, you know, when you look around, and you're right, over the past year, it's Ted, I've lost cousins, I've lost people that were influential in my life. The other day I went to a memorial for the mom of a young man that played basketball at Catonsville High School, Teron Owens. His mom's name was Sandy. We all called her Miss Sandy. And she's just one of those people, you know, when I was saying to folks what I remembered about her, she was one of those moms that whenever I needed to know the truth, I needed to know what was happening in the community, what was happening at Winter's Lane and with the kids that she cared so deeply about, I knew I could call Miss Sandy and say, "Hey, Sandy, could you come in and just visit with me for a little while as a principal?" We would talk about things, and she was invaluable. And, you know, Nestor, one of my takeaways, And I don't know if you and I have ever talked about this issue. So this is a bit fascinating. I have some friends who are very uncomfortable at funerals and memorials and celebrations of life, however you want to refer to them, and uncomfortable in that sometimes they don't even go, even though they care deeply. And I've always felt that even though they can be emotional and difficult, that closure is so important. You know, whether it's someone who's a really close friend or someone you just feel the need to be there. I'm thinking of Tom Matty. I didn't know Tom well either. We met each other a number of times, obviously, in different circles where we would, where our paths would cross, and he was always just as much of a gentleman as a person can be. I'm thinking of Tom and the people that would go to his service. I remember going to Chuck Thompson's service and thinking, boy, this is really special. You know, this is a, Chuck was in our lives. He was coming out of that transistor radio. So there's a whole combination of things that happened, but the need to get closure and say goodbye and celebrate someone's life, I think, is an important capstone. And I don't know that I've ever talked to you about how you feel about memorials and celebrations and funerals.
Well, I've only gotten in the car one time since I had the needles in my back. And the reason I got in the car was because Ray Bachman's grandmother died. And it was she had two nights over in right by you, over in the Lansdowne Arbutus area. And it's 6 miles from my house, and it was all I could do is to get in a car because my back was hurting. And on Monday night, I bailed on it because I couldn't go. I said, we got to go Tuesday because I'm going to give myself 24 more hours. And I got over there. And, you know, at that point, I usually go to a service to try to be supportive of the people that are there, that the survivors, no matter who it is. I think a lot about the people still here and what you can do to comfort them. So I always think, am I a source of comfort or am I an adornment or, you know, a flower on the wall? Am I there for the person who died or am I there for the people around, and who am I paying respect to? In what way? So that sort of drives it. I guess I do feel a sense of guilt about a couple I should have gone to that I haven't. You know, I had a friend of mine's father die in recent times, and I didn't make it. And I'll tell you this, and this would speak to you and me. You know, my mom died recently, and I guess you never really think about your mother's funeral or like how it's going to go or whatever, even at her advanced age. But the people that showed up at her funeral sort of moved to a different level in my world. You know what I mean? You came to my mom's funeral. That said something about how you feel about me. Because most people didn't know my mom. You didn't even really know my mom. I mean, my mom was 98 years old. The people that came, it was more about them coming for me. And I'm like, wow, you really like me. That's like, you know, that's a different kind of emotion to come to support someone. So I guess I maybe view it, interesting you'd ask that. I think I view it differently after my mother's funeral than I even, and when my wife was in peril a couple of times, people that step up when, you know, the hour of need, whatever your hour of need is, or when your back hurts and you're checking in every day and saying, hey, are you walking? Can I bring you toilet paper? Can I help you get from the bed to the toilet because you got to go to the bathroom and you can't do it on your own? You know, and I've been there in those cases, and you as a parent and a grandparent as well, right? So, you know, it's just the basic humanity part of being supportive of someone's emotions or physical or emotional needs, right?
Yeah,
and I think death brings out, everyone handles death differently. I'm a quiet death guy. I don't want to talk to you. I just hold my hand and shut up. You know, that's me. But that's having dealt with deaths now. That's how I'm better at it. You know what I mean? For me.
Yeah, no, it's a process and every family deals with it differently. You know, we've been through the sequence where you have discussions about what age you begin to introduce your children and grandchildren to the whole concept of funerals and memorials and celebrations. And
well, how about this, Dom? When I was 23, my father died, right? Or I was 23. I needed my hand held, right? At 53, I got to be the person that is there helping other people, right? That's my role in this.
And it is something that we teach and you pass down generationally. You know, you say to your grandson or to your granddaughter, you know, you put the nice dress on, you go up and grab your blue blazer and your pair of khakis, and when you walk in, you don't have to say anything more than I'm really sorry. And the people will appreciate that, and they begin to get a sense of, okay, there is this sort of circle of life, and we do come, as you said, to not you know, I've always thought you don't come for the person that's passed away. You go to show support and say, hey, your mom mattered, your dad mattered. I mean, the last.
Well, I guess people putting this on the radio, Don and I talk about people dying and stuff. Too many people are dying. We're going to a lot of funerals.
Right.
But you know why? Because we had relationships and we're older in life and we've had enough people with enough people that matter that even when their mother dies, if we don't know them, we need to be there for them,
well,
right? So
I do use particularly folks who are close to me. And then we'll get off this topic and talk about something.
Well, I want to talk about Tom Matty as much as anything.
I want to talk about Tom. I'm going to go back to Tom. I say the one thing that you do, and I'll tell you my memory of Tom, it's one that's shared by most Baltimoreans my age. But the last thing I'll say about memorials and funerals and what have you is that I use them. I find them powerful to me to think about what impact an individual had on my life, you know, whether it's, a Mrs. Phyllis Plaviak, who was sort of the everybody's grandmother at Mount St. Joe and took my brother and me under her wing when we were young pups and kind of wild and crazy, you know, whether it's Ted, who was always, you know, an advisor and a counselor to me, up to whether it was Miss Sandy Owens, who, when I was principal at Catonsville High School, would interrupt her day to come over and talk to me about some things that were happening. So I use it to say, man, I've been really fortunate to have these kind of people in my life. The Tom Matty thing, Nestor, and you're way too young for this, but I should have looked it up. I can't remember, but the famous year where he ended up being the quarterback with the plays written out on the card on his wrist. And
I think it was 65.
Green Bay, were we playing Green Bay, I want to say.
Well, he wrote that letter last year to the kid from Denver, and that showed up in the Hall of Fame. So I think 65 is the right number. I'm the wrong historian on that one. It was before I was born.
Yeah, I mean, it was just, you know, it was just remarkable.
You tell me, you were on the planet I wasn't.
Well, as I'm saying, I'll get the day. I'll look it up. Now that we've mentioned it, I will look it up when we're done. But it's a great childhood memory. I mean, I was a teenager. Yeah, so you're saying I'm either, you know, I'm somewhere between 14, 15, 16 at that point. And the cults were a religion. I mean, anybody that's seen the movie. Now, I bet you have. You hate movies. But I bet you've seen Diner. Somewhere along.
I've seen Diner, sure.
There you go.
I don't hate movies. I hate lousy movies.
Anybody who's seen Diner knows what a religion the Colts were when you walk down the wedding aisle to the Baltimore Colts fight.
Well, I mean, that's where I would jump off and say that my Tom Matty story has everything to do with that, right? So, I mean, Tom did my show maybe once or twice ever because he worked for my competitor, right? So, like, that's just where it's at. But I had a picture of Tom and I actually thought he was out with Tom Davis and Ordell Bracy, but it was Tom Davis or Del Bracy and Artie Donovan in the picture. So the time I thought he was out, he wasn't. I thought it was Tom Matty and it was Tom Davis. So Tom Matty sat with me and Brian, and I found this picture, and it was from the Friday night before Brian lost to the St. Louis Rams with Scott Mitchell. It was the first game. It was Chris McAllister's first game, 1999. And it was the beginning of that Vermeil. It was the first Kurt Warner game. Kurt Warner was going to the Hall of Fame. So this is 48 hours before that game on a Friday night to kick off the season. Billick insisted that he come to the barn. This is Billick, right? So Brian, right? You talk about all the people on my deathbed that have made a difference in my life. Brian Billick. Right there, right? And Brian, it's one of the first times Brian had come out to meet the fans. And there's Tom Matty sitting there in this picture. And that's the picture I found of Tom. And I thought, that's a great picture. But my story with Tom comes much later in life. I guess this was probably 2006, 2007, 2008. To put it into perspective. So somewhere in that range, 13, 15 years ago. And Tom, I always interacted with Tom. He was always super nice to me. And I think he'd even pulled me up and told me that he liked my radio show and he listened in the car and like
well,
whatever.
That sounds like Tom, right?
Yeah, I mean, Tom was just a nice man. And Tom loved being a Colt. Tom loved being a celebrity. Tom loved talking to people. Tom loved golf tournaments.
That's where I ran into him.
Tom loved that role. He really did. He embraced being a Colt with the kind of humility and service, like literally, and this is where I'll get to the story. It's one thing to go out and drink the free beer and eat the free chicken and be the, you know, the old athlete or whatever, whatever that perception of that might be. Tom comes to me. And I was, and Tony Lekas would be involved in this story because Tony's the longtime first face of the organization when you walked in. And
one
this
of
was
my
in the
favorite all time people.
Well, she's at the front door of the facility when you walk right in underneath Art Modell's picture. So
now her daughter's there.
Right. This is how it, this is where it happened right there in right, the right. lobby. Tom comes in to sees me. And, you know, the Billick trophies there and the – it may have been the Christmas tree. I don't know. But Tom says, hey, Nestor, hey, come here, man. Hey, listen, last week you sent a note over to Lenny Moore, and I know Lenny does these things. And these things, code, is we used to get calls at the radio station. I'll try to get through this without busting up. We used to get calls at the radio station, and people would say – hey, Nasty, my uncle's dying over in Catonsville, and he loved the Colts. Anything you can do? Yeah, what the hell am I going to do, you know? Lenny Moore, it might have been Ray's idea. Lenny Moore would say, hey, give me a call. Well, I'll go visit with him. We find out Lenny Moore starts going to people's bedside for hours, all day. Right, I mean, literally one day, Lenny Moore spent the whole day with this dying person in West Baltimore. So we start calling Lenny. Tom Maddie comes up and says, hey, I hear Lenny's been doing this. I had to do it for Lenny last week. Take my number. Put it in your phone. Call me.
Wow.
Tom Maddie.
Wow. That's what, boy, that's a mic drop there, right? I mean, you know, that's a Brooks Robinson type of story there. That's the kind of thing Brooksy would do and has done. It's special. I looked it up. It was 65. He came in as a substitute in the Rams game, and the Colts win the Rams game to advance to the championship game against the Packers, and they end up losing. And again, you won't remember, but guys my age and gals my age will, they end up losing on a field goal that really was wide left.
My dad's still pissed about that, and he's been dead right. guards of face since 92.
It's why they raised the field. It's why they raised the goalpost, Nestor, because that field
was that
goal
Jim Tunney?
Was I don't remember.
I think
that.
My dad, he blamed Jim Tunney for it if it wasn't
but,
Jim
I mean,
Tunney,
it so. Was the reason that they raised the size of the goalpost because the field goal was so bad. I mean, and in that game, I mean, Matty actually ran for like 90 yards, threw for 40
Well, remember,
yards.
Stedman had the picture in the paper, and the ball the was wide of the – it could have been an optical illusion in the picture.
No, way wide. I mean, I remember that day, and of course, as a kid, I'm – you know, I'm like a madman.
Because you could see it from home all the way to Green Bay.
Oh, yeah, we're all jammed in my little living room over there. I guess I was.
Look, man, there's Tom Maddie's number in my phone. He said, I'll never forget. He's like, get your phone out. Put my number in your phone. You call me.
That really is. You know what?
Tom Maddie.
You know, and boy, doesn't that speak to those guys of that era.
Well, it speaks to the importance of the Colts in sports, too, to the community. And what it meant to your mother and what it meant to my father, right? Literally.
I was just going
to
say, I mean, you know the famous story where we go to, at that time, Friendship Airport when they win the greatest game ever played. We lose my dog. My dog jumps out of the car, never to be seen again. But the Colts, again, if you're out there and you haven't seen Barry Levinson's Diner, call it up on Netflix today. You won't be disappointed, and you'll understand what Nestor and I are talking about. To understand what the Colts were. Nestor, I always tell the story. I don't know if I've told it on our show before or not, but you know, I'm a junior in high school. I just told this to somebody last week because they asked me how I ended up at Western Maryland College. And I said, I was a junior in high school, summer. I can see it like it was yesterday. And my mother is now beginning to bug me, right, as moms and dads would. My mother's going, you're going to be a senior. You're going to be a senior. You haven't even looked at colleges. You haven't even thought of colleges. It's, what are you doing? It's time, you know, she's getting on me. And I'm like, geez, and crackers, Mom, what are you doing? And I'm reading the sports page. You know, I was a very well-educated kid for read the sports page. So I'm looking at the sports page, and the sports page said, Colts open up training camp at Western Maryland College today. And I go, hey, Mom, how about if I go to Western Maryland College? She was happy as could be. All right, now I'm going to make an appointment. We're going to go up. I said, okay, Mom. And Nestor, it's the worst way to pick a college. It ended up being great for me. I loved it.
I wanted to go to Penn State friend. Because of John Cappelletti at one point, but I cleaned myself up after that. Listen, you know,
I had a good buddy who transferred from Western Maryland when we were there because the Terps had recruited Len Elmore and Tom McMillan. He said, I got to go down. They got.
I
got
to go to Cole. You couldn't just go down for the games, right?
Yeah, I got to get out of Westminster, man. I got to go to college.
Got to go to the NC State game.
I got to go to College Park. So, and something was always happening. But, yeah, it's been, you know, hey, Tom, Maddie, thanks for all the memories. Oh, what I was going to say, Nestor, was that the closeness of those guys. There was nothing. You and I often talk about, we had a recent discussion with John Feinstein about, you know, whether emotion that we see on screen at sporting events is real. There was nothing phony about the emotional connection between Unitas and Szymanczyk and Marchetti. And
well, I saw Bill Maddie. Curry. You know, Bill Curry was tweeting out, you know, about Tom Maddy and his life. And, you know, that's very obvious for you know, and I've had a long conversation this week about team versus I, and I know you've spent a whole lifetime, you know, preaching that and the differences between I and team, and Aaron Rodgers this week, and Henry Ruggs, and what's going on with football, and what's going, and even the owners fighting with each other, which I've spent the whole week. I don't need to talk about it with you because go listen to anything I've done this week, but just people getting along and teamwork, and even in our country, everything we talk about with politics.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, that's a really good point, Nestor. You mentioned someone, and you've known me. We've known each other a long time. I sometimes, friends of mine and family will say to a fault, I really don't easily dislike someone. I don't hold a grudge. I rarely get angry. I don't know what that's all about, but I just don't. And so it's really unusual for me to hate another team. You know, I'll root for my team, but I don't hate another team or hate another player. I don't know what psychologist Dr. Phil probably have a ball figuring out why that is. But I will tell you, a guy that's getting pretty close to coming on a rare list, which is one where I say, I really don't like that SOB, is Aaron Rodgers. My guess is, Nestor, that he is one insufferable human being that is so self-centered that I couldn't stand to be around him for 1 or 2 minutes. I will actually, so you got me on a rant now. I will actually root hard against them if they go deep into these playoffs because of him, because that's how much I don't like. I can't look at his commercials. There's just something about the self-centered nature of him. And that's very, very different than the way I feel about a Ben Roethlisberger, the way I feel about a Peyton Manning. I don't know any of these guys. So they all might be good guys.
Well, we talked about Feinstein and golf and how these guys all hate DeChambeau and how it's such an individual game that it's a different level of expectation for what you expect out of that kind of athlete than someone making $40 million a year on a football team leading people. And again, I keep going back to this, and this is where I am at 53. I just, the lack of integrity, the lack of transparency, the lack of honesty, that's the problem for me.
Well, Nestor, why do you lie about
so you
the
get
vaccine?
To play because you don't want to take the vaccine?
I mean, that part, it's like, dude, first of all, do we think everyone should be vaccinated? Of course. But if you aren't, at least step up and say you aren't. Don't defraud your team, your organization. And my point all along on the vaccine has been, I mean, forget the nation and whether you should or shouldn't get it. And I, you know, people have to make their own decisions. But if you're on a team, you're endangering your team in terms of their ability to go into the playoffs and accomplish a team goal. Aaron Rodgers not being able to play for the next week or two, that hurts his team. And that goes back to the ire or team thing that you're talking about. I just don't get it. You know, I would have killed, you and I would have killed to have the ability that these guys have to be a professional athlete. I say, if I had been able to field, hit, and hit with power and be a five-tool player and play for the Orioles, that would have been an absolute dream for me. And if I did, I'm pretty confident I would have been a team player. You know, one of the things I always tried to look for in the workforce, and I always prided myself, whether it was a young teacher or a young administrator or someone then who moved on to government, to try to be a team player, the sense that we're all in this together. We do it together. It's not an individual show. It's a cliche, but it's a cliche. It's true. We're stronger when we're together. And just being out there on an island, it never works for me. It disgusts me, quite frankly.
Well, the implications of what's going on, and you mentioned sticking together. The NFL owners are sticking together and sticking up for Dan Snyder, and that's a whole other thing about sticking up for the wrong stuff. And the league, continues to churn on. We're all watching football. The Ravens play two games in 5 days this week, and you're going to the games, and we're, getting ready for all that, and we'll have Thanksgiving around the corner. Boy. The recon this week. Go ahead, Doug. Hey,
no, real quick, and we'll wrap it up and get out of here. What do you think, Nestor? And I haven't heard all the shows this week. I apologize for that. But what do you think is behind the league's obvious attempt to bend over backwards to protect the football team? What's that all? What's at the core of that?
The core of that is probably things that implicate other people in 650,000 emails that are getting leaked out. No one seems to know where the leak's going. The obvious part to me, and again, I've had just an AA list this week of guests. Ken Belson's been on with me talking. Like, I'm going to get Andrew Brandt on before it's all over with this week. A couple things are happening. This St. Louis lawsuit and Stan Kroenke and the league, they're getting their ass kicked in the lawsuit, which really harkens back to eminent domain and us losing the Colts as we take it back to Tom Matty, that the St. Louis situation has created a really caustic thing. But their disdain for Mark Davis and Al Davis and the Raiders and the Vegas situation, that was a hit on the Raiders organization. And it's a little bit of look over there at John Gruden. Beth Wilkinson did this report. It was now, and this is the new NDA, you know, for the Trumpies out there and the lawyers always trying to, sleazebag lawyers, that instead of doing these reports now, they spent $10 million on the Beth Wilkinson report for this Washington football, the cheerleaders and, right, and the sexual harassment. And the new way we do this now is we have an oral report. So there's no paper, there's no email, there's no trail. There's an oral report now given for $10 million. It must have been a hell of a report for a two-hour report in front of the audience. $10 million they spent on a report that's not ever to be written because it may involve some unseemly things. This is why Congress is getting involved in this, because there is no oversight. And, you've seen a derby government here the last 4 years, you know, run the United States of America and create an insurrection that's not been accounted for. I can't imagine in the NFL, whatever Goodell's hiding, it really does come down to they won't roll on another owner for the same reason the owners wouldn't roll on Peter when he was suing them.
Right.
I mean, you wonder why the owners hate Peter and why the Orioles are in the shape they're in. 30 years of bad ownership. But more than that, the fighting that Peter has done with all of his partners by suing all of them in this Masson thing the last 15 years, this is the damage of Mark Davis and his father suing them, that this is the true fight that's going on there. At the heart of it, though, I'll extend the conversation to you because it does involve your buddy Peter, that the baseball owners would have been better off throwing Peter out in 06 and saying, we're putting that team in D.C. and you're going to sue us. And at some point, we'll get you out. It may cost us $2 billion, but we'll get you out of the club because we don't want you in the club. And instead, they've let him hang around and he sued them for 15 years. And he's a wet boogie. They can't, now he's going to die and they can't get rid of him. They've never been able to get rid of Mark Davis. And now the Daniel Snyder thing, how long are they going to keep that person in their club? And what's the eventual cost going to be? Yeah. And that, to your point, is you've had bad teachers that you've kept around 1 year longer, 2 years, 5 years, because you couldn't get rid of them because of unions and this and that. And then you say, would it have been better just to get rid of that person?
Before they drink and drive
and kill someone at 3 a.m. or whatever awful thing's going to happen. Before the emails get released as to the shit they were really doing. Yeah, the Matt Lauer stuff. You know what I mean?
Thank goodness, very few bad teachers. And I do want to say, I never viewed it as a notch on the belt or anything. But when we did come across a bad teacher, I do like
to say, I don't just mean a teacher, Don. I mean in any – that's not personal to you. I'm saying when you keep the wrong person on your team and then the whole boat goes down and you've known all along it was going to hurt a lot to make that move. I might get sued. I might get accused. But I got to pull that weed out of the garden because that weed grows and that weed takes your garden.
I would have certainly thought that Snyder would go down in some way in this, but that's not going to happen. Hey, real quick, we'll jump on out of here. I'm going to come back next week on the Recon and report on a Baltimore phenomenon that is going to be pretty special. You know, I have a grandson.
Is that sauerkraut and pure Boston on Thanksgiving?
I've got a grandson at McDonough, and I've got a grandson at Gilman. And this weekend, there's the Gilman-McDonough football game. And I've had a lot of people tell me that it's one of the great prep sports traditions in Baltimore. Never been there, never seen it. I'm going to be like the president, Nestor. I got a Gilman hat for one half, and then I'm going to walk over to the McDonough side and put the McDonough hat on. So I will be back next week to report on prep sports and what it looks like at a Gilman McDonough football game.
And I'm going to ask you the really hard questions here. We're not going to green room about how public education and private education are different, because you're such a public education guy. That's an interesting conversation.
I am a real public educator. Yeah, it is. We'll do that next week. It'd be a great.
I mean, this is something your family goes through every day in making decisions that every family goes through here. And I hear the recruitment of the Calvert Halls and the Curleys and the Catholics and all of that. My parents had it with me when I was a kid, that the decision making of all of that, it's, I think it's a great conversation.
Great, great discussion for next week on the Recon. Hopefully when we come back, we'll have a Ravens win. Who the heck knows? It's the NFL. We'll get back to it, but the Recon.
Speaking of public education, there's a rumor that Johnny Ushefsky is going to have me at Colgate Elementary at some point here in the next week, too. So you'll want to be on the lookout for that. I'll be the guy saying, beat those prep schools, those Gilmans and McDonald's. I don't care about them. Give me the Dundalk. Let each fellow join our chorus, echo foreign. All right, there we go. A little Dundalk high. You always sing the St. Joe fight song.
Oh, I will be glad to sing the St. Joe fight song next week. My buddy Kevin Kamenetz will be smiling down as you cut the ribbon on your elementary school, one of the ongoing examples of the progress he made with Schools for Our Future. So very, very, very proud in that $1.6 billion investment.
There you go. See, I mean, I know it always comes back to that, but look, as long as the water fountain outside where Mrs. Houck's classroom was is still cold, clean water, I'm all for it. And by the way, speaking of Colgate Elementary, and I'll bring this up with the county executive, last week was the anniversary of the electric company. And the electric company was a formative part of my childhood, 1972, 73, 74. Morgan Freeman, amongst many others. And this is where I tell you I've never seen Shawshank Redemption. He is Don Bowler.
Lord of mercy.
I am Nestor. We are doing the Recon, and that was the Recon. All of our WNSD programming brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery, and we'll let yourself play, but the Crab Cake Tour is coming to State Fair and our friends at the Beaumont on December 9th. I'm celebrating 30 years of doing this on December 13th, so we're going to have a little celebration. Crab Cakes will be involved, probably eggnog that time of the year as well. I picked up some pumpkin ice cream from Wise the other night, so I'm excited about that. Crab Cake Tour's out on the road. We're at Silver Spring Mining. We're going to be at the Chop Tank on Friday. Next week at Fadley's on Wednesday. And great guest list there. And then on Friday at Nick's Grandstand Grill. And with Mayor Brandon Scott at Coco's on the 17th. Lots going on. I'm Nestor. We are WNSD. AM 1570 Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.